Good evening. Welcome to the sixth installment of Let's Rock and Roll. I'm your host, DJ Treble, and I can't wait for my classic soul to share some classic rock knowledge with you all every Monday night on radio.dominican.edu, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. Each week, I will be telling you all about a legendary band from the classic rock era. We're talking 60s and 70s here. That'll have the baby boomers feeling nostalgic and the newer generations ready to discover something old, yet something brand new. This week, we'll be jamming together to an explosive band, The Who. Now, three of the founding members of The Who all grew up in London. Singer Roger Daltrey, guitarist Pete Townshend, and bassist John Entwistle. Townshend was raised in a family of musicians. His father played saxophone, and his mother sang in the entertainment division of the Royal Air Force during World War II. So, naturally, they supported Pete in his endeavors in rock and roll. Townshend and Entwistle became pretty good friends while at Acton County Grammar School and formed a traditional jazz group to suit John's playing of the French horn, which in later albums, especially in Tommy, their most famous album, John Entwistle actually plays the French horn on a few tracks, but that's well into the future. So the two of them become really interested in rock and roll, so much they become obsessed enough to form a rock band, with Entwistle moving to guitar, but switched to bass after struggling with strumming the strings with his large fingers. However, he wasn't able to afford a bass guitar, so what does he do? He builds his own. That's pretty cool. After the boys graduated Acton, Townshend enrolled in art school. Meanwhile, Entwistle was discovered by Roger Daltrey, just randomly on the street while carrying his bass guitar. Daltrey's connection to Entwistle and Townshend, without actually knowing it, was through Acton, but he was a year above them. Originally from a working-class region called Shepherd's Bush, which is in West London, he struggled fitting in at school, and he used rock and roll and gangs, but mostly rock and roll, as his outlet to find a way of fitting in. He was expelled from school at age 15 and found work on a building site. He formed this band, The Detours, in 1959, the foundation of the future form of The Who. The band played professional gigs and corporation parties, such as corporation parties and weddings, for 2 years strong until Daltrey and Entwistle met. In 1961, Entwistle officially joined the band alongside Townshend on rhythm guitar. Daltrey was on lead guitar, a guy named Harry Wilson was on the drums, and another guy named Colin Dawson was on the vocals. The band's repertoire consisted of traditional jazz and pop covers, and Daltrey was the leader of the band, something Townshend always resented until he later gained creative control of The Who. And another big argument between the band members was his excessive need for control of the band. A year later, in 1962, Harry Wilson was fired and replaced by Doug Sandham, a more experienced musician, and also experienced in the marriage department and experience in age. He was actually 15 years older than the rest of the band members. Born in 1930, whereas Entwistle, Townshend, and Daltrey were born between 1944 and 1945. Dawson left due to his frequent arguing with Daltrey. I mean, notoriously, Daltrey is kind of a hard guy to work with once we talk more about the working conditions of the band. But this prompted Roger Daltrey to become the vocalist and eventually the face of the band. Townshend then became the lead guitarist after Entwistle encouraged him, and Entwistle himself began to evolve into playing melodies on the bass, something he would become really good at and well known for. And so the Detours became a supporting act after Townshend's mother gets them a management contract with a local promoter. You gotta love those connections and networking, huh? On February 13th, 1964, the Detours come across another band called Johnny Devlin and the Detours. So they have to change their name. Side note, Johnny Devlin and the Detours never made it big, but I mean, this future band did. What's their name? I don't know. But I mean, who's the real winner here? I'm not funny. Townshend and his roommate spent the entire night coming up with names, and they were kind of leaning towards the path of something satirical, because when you start promoting a band, it would be like, ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles. So they were thinking, well, ladies and gentlemen, no one, or ladies and gentlemen, the group, is what they were thinking along. yeah, think about it. And now performing tonight in London, no one. That's actually kind of clever. But Townsend was partial to The Hair for some reason. Ladies and gentlemen, The Hair. I mean, it sounds like a hippie band, but that's okay. His roommate, though, liked The Who because it sounded the most pop and more appealing to audiences. So, ladies and gentlemen, The Who. And it actually kind of stuck, maybe. But no, for real. Daltrey agrees with the name The Who, and on Valentine's Day in 1964, The Who was born. By this time, The Who find regular gigs. And after a recommendation from Fontana Records to replace their drummer, Townsend pretty much told this guy, Doug Sandham, who was the drummer, you suck. I'm going to fire you if you continue to suck. So stop sucking. Sandham gets all sad and butthurt pretty much, going, well, I have the most experience. That's fine. I'll leave the band and find work somewhere else. So he leaves the band in haste, but he's persuaded to lend his kit to future stand-ins and replacements, if they ever do find one. And this is where Keith Moon enters. So Keith Moon had been drumming professionally since 1961, and his most steady job was with a semi-professional band called the Beachcombers. And Moon wants a full-time gig as a drummer, so one day he sits in with The Who. During his first sit-in, he breaks the bass drum pedal and tears up the drum skin, and his destructive nature would definitely become a big characteristic in the band. The band loves his reckless energy and just his strange enthusiasm to playing drums, so they offer him the permanent job as the drummer. Ironically, the Beachcombers ask Sandham, the former Who drummer, to audition, but they end up really unimpressed with his drumming, basically saying, yeah, you really do suck. Ha. The Who change managers to a man named Pete Meaden, who goes absolutely crazy with the marketing and promotional side of the band. He wanted The Who to be the representing band of the mod movement in Britain, which is pretty much young kids my age wearing tailor-made clothing, riding on motor scooters, and listening to more modern music, such as soul and R&B, but not rock and roll. The mods didn't like rock and roll very much. They liked more, not necessarily pop music, but nothing too weird, whatever that means. So Meaden renames the band the High Numbers and dresses them in more mod clothes, which is basically suits, just... they wear suits a lot, but yeah, suits pretty much. And they release a single called Zoot Suit, all for the mods. Big marketing promotion. The song fails to reach the top 50, and Meaden fails at promoting a band as something they aren't, so he's kicked out. But the band grows into their stage image. Daltrey starts using his microphone cable as a whip on stage, and he occasionally leaps into the crowd. Moon throws his drumsticks in the air mid-beat, and Townsend adopts his signature windmilling motion with his arm. If you see videos of him watching, he does that circular motion with his arm and pretty much breaks his shoulder blade every time. Yeah, that's the windmill. And he even pretends, even in his earlier shows, he pretended to use the head of his guitar as a machine gun towards the audience and kind of shoot them. Just something really destructive. He would jump around on stage and even stand with his arms spread out, allowing guitar to produce feedback, something he called the Birdman. So The Who embodied rock and roll with these stage antics and kind of these flamboyant actions, and it was just really cool. It was the beginning of their reputation as an amazing live band. So The Who lands a gig at the Railway Hotel, which would become a regular venue for them. During a performance at the Railway in June 1964, Townsend accidentally breaks the head of his guitar nearby the edge of the stage. The audience just cracks up laughing, and this angers Townsend to a total frenzy, pretty much. So, as a result, he starts smashing his guitar in front of the audience, and he picks up another guitar and goes on with the show. Angry, of course. The audience was like, whoa, we love this. This is awesome. And they demand more guitar smashing. So, a week later, Keith Moon, up for any opportunity to smash things, he kicks his drum set over in the following week, and it just becomes completely destroyed. And this becomes a staple in The Who's performances, destroying instruments for entertainment. I mean, can this be any more rock and roll? But in late 1964, The Who desires to become popular in the U.S., specifically attract the attention of American producer Shel Talmy, who produced The Kinks. So to get their feet in the door, Townsend pretty much writes one of the Who's most famous songs, I Can't Explain, as closely related to the Kinks as possible to get Tommy to sign the band. And it works. The band is signed to the U.S. branch of Decca Records, and I Can't Explain is recorded as a single in November 1964. Fun fact, Jimmy Page, the Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin, is featured on the B-side, Bald-Headed Woman. I Can't Explain becomes so popular on pirate radio stations, which are similar to hipster radio stations, but their purpose, they were in the UK during the 1960s, nowhere else, but mainly they were there to play the rock and roll music on a smaller scale, broadcasted from sea to seaports and offshore boats, like offshore from Britain anyway. While the bigger radio stations such as BBC Radio, they refused to play any rock and roll. They played more the mod music, the R&B and the soul. So this was kind of just another way for rock and roll to get exposure while kind of going against the system was through pirate radio. And the first pirate radio station, Radio Caroline, loved The Who and gave them a lot of exposure. The Who's first TV appearance was on the British program Ready, Steady, Go, which skyrockets the airplay of I Can't Explain into the top 10 in the UK charts. The more popular the band becomes and the more original material they created, the more Roger Daltrey becomes displeased with the band, and he really preferred performing covers of songs, especially R&B songs. He didn't like singing his own material, or Townsend's own material, pretty much. It also didn't help that The Who weren't even friends with each other, apart from Keith Moon and John Entwistle, who were always close friends since, well, they met, pretty much. And they would hang out in London nightclubs and destroy hotels together and just do anything awesome. So The Who notoriously have a terrible working relationship, which obviously I'll comment on with various events with the band throughout the show. But event number one was while they were on tour in Denmark in September 1965, when Daltrey flushed Moon's amphetamines down the toilet and assaulted him. Daltrey got confronted by the band about the incident once they returned to Britain, and the band agreed that Daltrey could remain in the band as long as the group functioned without him being as controlling as a leader. The Who releases another single a month later called My Generation, the first song you're going to hear tonight. Townsend originally anticipated the song to be slow blues, but he settled for just straight rock and roll with a powerful riff and Entwistle with a bass solo that's just fantastic and really drives the song home. Also listen for the stutters made by Daltrey, which emulated the mods on Amphetamines. This song is a shout out to the mods and the general teenage angst, along with the two key changes and the line, I hope I die before I get old. Don't take that line literally, though. Here's My Generation on Penguin Radio.
People try to put us to death.
Talking about my generation.
Just because we get around.
Talking about my generation.
Things they do look awful.
Talking about my generation.
I hope I die before I get old.
Talking about my generation.
My generation. Generation, baby, why don't you all fade away?
Generation.
Don't try to dig what we all say.
About my generation.
I'm not trying to cause a big sensation.
About my generation.
I'm just talking about my generation. What we all
talking about my generation.
I'm trying to cause a big sensation. Just talking about my generation. We could get around.
Talking about my generation.
Things they do look awful.
Talking about
die before I get old.
Talking about my generation.
Welcome back. This is DJ Treble, and you're listening to Let's Rock and Roll on Penguin Radio. My Generation peaked at number 2 on the UK charts, and the song was featured on their debut album under the same name, released in late 1965. The album caters to both Townsend's direction, with original content such as The Kids Are All Right and that song you just heard, and several James Brown covers to make Daughtry happy. The band changes labels for the 328th time, well not really, the band and record producers just really don't mix, to Reaction and release Substitute, about identity crisis, now one of their most popular songs from this era. Tell Me, now butthurt with the band, took legal action over the B-side for the single, so Substitute had to be withdrawn, and so it was never released to the public, at least not for very long. The band releases two more singles, I'm a Boy and Happy Jack. Event number 2 comes with more conflict for the band. On May 20th, 1966, Entwistle and Moon arrive late to a gig after they were working with one of the members of the Beach Boys. So during their performance of My Generation, Townsend attacks Moon with his guitar, causing Moon a black eye and several bruises. Moon and Entwistle lead the band, but they come back a week later. This didn't stop Moon from looking for other work, including drums on a Jeff Beck song, Beck's Bolero, which Jeff Beck admitted to use as a means of attempting to convince Moon to get out of The Who, because he thought it was too much of a toxic relationship for that. But nothing about the personal pressure on the band could be done. But the next album required each member to write 2 songs to help save on finances. Entwistle emerges as a promising songwriter and a backup for Townsend in the songwriting department. His first composition was entitled Boris the Spider, written in 6 minutes. After a night out drinking with Rolling Stones bass guitarist Bill Wyman. The two were discussing funny names for animals, and Entwistle drunkenly comes up with Boris the Spider, and he finds it absolutely hilarious. Although he wrote it with a horror song in mind, and it is technically considered a horror song, I can't help but laugh whenever I hear it. The lyrics are just so random, and I mean, it's just a song about a spider. It's great. But featured on this song is in the chorus sung in basso profundo, or if you listen to some heavy metal genres, specifically death metal, you hear this growl, which you hear in the chorus. It's just a method of vocalization techniques in heavy metal songs, but you'll hear that. It's kind of the birth of that death growl. And the part in the middle eight where it goes creepy crawly, sung in falsetto right after the death growl. So that's where kind of the horror comes in. But this is a crowd favorite, especially performed in their earlier gigs. This would always be performed up until the mid-70s when Entwistle started creating more songs. Even Jimi Hendrix said this was his favorite Who song, and that is saying something. So, what are we waiting for? Let's get to the song. You're listening to Boris the Spider on Let's Rock and Roll at radio.dominican.edu.
Crawling up my wall, black and hairy, very small. Now he's up above my head, hanging by a little thread. Boris the Spider, Boris the Spider. Now he's dropped onto the floor.
as scared as me. Where's he gone now? I can't see. Wrapped in a ball, doesn't seem to move at all. Perhaps he's dead, I'll just make sure.
Welcome back to Let's Rock and Roll on Penguin Radio. I'm your host, DJ Treble. Now, Boris the Spider was featured on The Who's second album, A Quick One, also called Happy Jack in the United States. The album featured Townsend's first longer piece, a 9-minute medley called A Quick One While He's Away, written about a girl who has an affair while her lover is away. The title is self-explanatory, but is forgiven at the end. Entering the year 1966, the mod movement was dwindling down in preference to the hippie counterculture, and The Who were now in the same field as Cream and the Jimi Hendrix Experience in terms of the London scene. So, commercial success in the United States was now more important than ever for The Who, and their first major U.S. concert was at 1967's Monterey Pop Festival, also known as the festival that Jimi Hendrix absolutely slays at. So here's a little story on that in a few moments. The band in general, Moon in particular, were 100% against the hippie movement. They didn't understand it. Well, they probably understood the concept of, like, peace and love and everything, but they just didn't understand that sort of, I don't know, they just didn't like hippies. And they wanted to perform their violent stage act as a contrast to the promotion of peace and love and all that good hippie stuff. So Jimi Hendrix wanted to do the same thing and smash his guitar. Even though he was more of a figure in the hippie counterculture, he still loved destroying his guitar on stage and whatever he did just to perform a good show. But this causes Townsend to verbally abuse Hendrix and accuse him of stealing his original act. Now, okay, I'm pretty sure Townsend stole the idea of smashing things from cavemen. I mean, how original is the idea of destroying something man-made? Not at all. So then, Hendrix and Townsend argue about who should play first and destroy their guitars. And The Who wins, and performs first. However, alluding back to show 3, Hendrix steals the show with his stage antics, including setting his guitar on fire, making The Who look like absolute amateurs. Nevertheless, The Who establishes credibility in the United States, and becomes a supporting act for Herman's Hermits. According to Daltrey, this point brings the band closer together. But for Moon, this was an exciting turning point for his reputation on tour. The Hermits informed him that cherry bombs were legal to purchase in Alabama, so this gives Moon the idea of using them to destroy hotel rooms, something he was well known for, specifically to blow up toilets. The first time he and Entwistle flushed a cherry bomb down the toilet, Moon described it as unforgettable. I never realized dynamite was so powerful. Okay. For his 21st birthday, the destruction of hotel rooms cost $24,000 and one of Moon's front teeth. Hey, Mom, that's exactly how I'm celebrating my 21st. Just kidding, maybe. Sorry, Mom. The Who released their next single, I Can See for Miles, right after their performance. Townsend saw this as his pride and joy, the ultimate Who record. He is disappointed that it only peaked at number 10 in the UK. Jeez, Pete, not all of us can create songs the general population likes. Only number 10? Really? However, it's the band's best-selling single in the United States, peaking at number 9. They performed the song on the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, which infamously featured another explosive Keith Moon antic. He bribed a stagehand to fill his drum kit with 10 times the expected amount of explosives. When it detonated, Moon was thrown off the drum riser, his arm was cut by a cymbal, and Townsend nearly went deaf in his left ear, as well as destroyed a camera and studio monitor. About the deafness, Townsend actually does have partial deafness as of today. I mean, I wonder why. I Can See From Miles is the featured song on The Who's third album, The Who's Sellout, the band's first concept album paying tribute to pirate radio, which became outlawed the same year the album was released in 1967. The album features songs followed by fake commercials, public service announcements, and jingles. It's intentionally ironic all the way through, especially with the album cover. Pete Townsend is shirtless and using an extra-large Odorono deodorant. And Roger Daltrey is sitting in a pile of baked beans, holding a can of Heinz baked beans, as a play on the band making commercials at that point in their career. So they definitely wanted to release more of a satirical album. Despite the lawsuits regarding branding copyright, basically using the Heinz logo, for example, without Heinz's permission, the critics love this album and even consider this their best album, which I don't particularly agree with. Because their fourth album, Tommy, is their best. Make no argument, it is their best. Trust me. Inspired by Townsend giving up drugs for the teachings of Mara Baba. Quick background on him. Baba was an Indian spiritual leader who believed he was God in human form and didn't speak for the last 44 years of his life as a methods of his teachings. As he died by his teachings, which included fasting and seclusion. Yeah, you're welcome. So, inspired by him, Townsend creates the concept of Tommy, a deaf, dumb, and blind boy who gains followers with his attempts to communicate with others. Two of the songs are inspired by Baba's teachings, Welcome and Amazing Journey, which you'll hear coming up next. Another song, Sally Simpson, is about a fan who tried to climb on stage during a Doors concert the band attended, so that really helps Townsend's inspiration. But their most famous song from this album is Pinball Wizard, which I've heard way too often. But funny story with the song. The song was written so New York Times journalist and pinball fan Nick Cohn would write a good review on the album. Sneaky Pete Townsend, how clever of him. But here's a snippet from the Tommy storyline, his amazing journey, with a quick segue into the trippy instrumental, Sparks. Listen to this on Let's Rock and Roll with DJ Treble, only on radio.dominican.edu.
I'm a blind boy, he's in a quiet vibration land. Strange as it seems, his musical dreams ain't quite so bad. Thank you. surely take the mind where minds can't usually go. Come on the amazing journey and learn all you should know. His eyes are the eyes that transmit all they know. Sparkle warm crystalline glances to show. He is your leader, he is your guide. On the amazing journey together you'll ride.
Coming your way, another weekly Bosco break and your update of Dominican volleyball. The Collins Center crowd rose to its feet and roared when sophomore Amy Steinward slammed her match-high 12th kill to secure the sweep for the Dominican University of California's women's volleyball team versus Concordia Irvine. The Penguins found themselves trailing in every set but secured their second sweep of the season to top the newest member of the PacWest Conference on Thursday, October 22nd. Unfortunately, just the opposite occurred in their last match against Dixie State on Saturday, October 24th. A game out of first place in the PacWest and winners of their last five matches, Dixie State used a balanced attack to hold on in a closely contested match. The Penguins were dealt a blow early on. Leading 13-12, the team's leading hitter, sophomore Amy Steinward, dove for a dig. She crumpled up after the attempt and did not return for the rest of the match. Dominican led 13-12 at that point, but Dixie State went on an 8-3 run to take a 20-17 lead and held on to take the first set 25-21. The following match, Dominican fell 20-25, and the final match was lost by 28-30. Dominican heads to Bay Area rival Notre Dame de Namur on Wednesday, October 28th for a 7 p.m. match. Then the Penguins return home for a 6-match homestand. Tune in next week for more of your Dominican sports updates. That wraps up your Bosco break. Thanks for listening.
Now we pause for station identification. This is Penguin Radio on radio.dominican.edu, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. Currently, you are listening to Let's Rock and Roll, and I'm your host, DJ Treble. I really hope you're enjoying this hour all about the Who, because we got a long way to go. I want to give you the basic plot of Tommy, just for clarification. So the story of Tommy focuses on a young boy named, well, you guessed it, Tommy, whose father goes missing and dies, or so we're led to believe, during an expedition. His mother gives birth to Tommy after his father's disappearance. A few years later, the father comes home and discovers his wife has found a new lover. He walks in on the two and murders the lover in front of Tommy. The mother brainwashes him into believing he didn't see or hear anything, which escalates to Tommy becoming deaf, dumb, and blind to his surroundings, forcing him to rely on touch and imagination, which he discovers on the last song I played for you, Amazing Journey. A whack job claims his wife can cure Tommy, while his parents are frustrated that their son will never find religion, which leads to them neglecting their son upon his sadistic cousin Kevin and his molester uncle Ernie. Tommy is also given LSD by the whack job's wife. That was literally her cure, LSD, also known as the Acid Queen. Tommy grows up and realizes he's pretty good at pinball, so he's pretty much a wizard, right? He's taken to a doctor who diagnoses Tommy's condition as psychosomatic rather than physical. So the doctor informs Tommy that he can see his reflection if he looks at himself in the mirror. So he does. A lot. The mother smashes his mirror to suppress her son, but instead gives Tommy's senses back, realizing he can become a powerful leader and, well, normal. But ironically, he starts a religious movement, so finally he founds that religion, but it becomes a holiday camp. It seriously sounds like how the Children of God was formed. His followers realize he's full of crap and leaves him at the end. And on that note, we fast forward in May 1969, when the album was released. It took nearly 2 years to complete. While the band was touring Tommy, Daltrey evolves himself as one of the best rock singers of all time, by growing his hair long and wearing open shirts. It's an attractive look. Google it. I promise you won't regret it. And Townsend begins to wear boiler suits and Doc Martens, and the Who really becomes their own as a live band that is worth seeing. So, and this is definitely established in August of 1969 when the band performs at Woodstock, and they absolutely kill it. Although the band demanded $13,000 up front and they were hesitant to perform anyway, they performed at 5 a.m. on that Sunday, playing primarily Tommy. During their performance, Abbie Hoffman, a Yippie leader, basically near anarchy, it's a very, very far left group, they interrupted the band by delivering a speech about the arrest of John Sinclair, who was a rock and roll manager who was given 10 years in prison for possession of marijuana. And basically, it's basically screw the establishment kind of speech. But Townsend, in classic Pete Townsend fashion, kicks him off stage, yelling, F off my effing stage. Towards the end, The Who performs See Me, Feel Me, While the Sun Was Rising. I absolutely love this performance, which you can find in the Woodstock film. Like I said before, The Who hated the hippie counterculture, and they especially hated the Woodstock Festival, even though it was their best performance of their careers. But a few weeks later, the band performed at the Second Isle of Wight Festival, which they enjoyed a lot more, especially Townsend. The concert itself is pretty good too. I highly recommend checking it out. By 1970, The Who were one of the biggest bands and one of the best live bands. So why not capitalize on that success with an official live album? Released in May 1970, Live at Leeds, a Valentine's Day performance promoting Tommy, has been considered one of, if not, the best live rock album of all time. The song I'll be playing for you next is a jazz song by Mose Allison, Young Man Blues. Daltrey loved performing covers, and The Who's rock version of this song is considered the most famous version. So here's this rendition where it first appeared on Live at Leeds, Young Man Blues, only on Let's Rock and Roll with DJ Trouble on radio.dominican.edu.
We'd like to carry on now and play a song originally recorded by Mose Allison, who's really a jazz musician, and I did read something on one of his record covers which said he was a jazz sage. And quite what that means, I don't know.
Flavour of chicken.
And anyway, we picked up quite a number of his songs. Eyesight to the Blind, which is on the Tommy album, we picked up from him. And also this song, which I think has got to be one of his best. It's one of his own compositions, which he wrote when he was about 40.
Teenager.
Just a mere teenager, and he called it Young Man Blues.
Well, a young man ain't got nothing in the world these days. I said a young man ain't got nothing in the world these days. Well, you know, in the old days, when a young man was a strong man, all the people, they stepped back when a young man walked by. You know, nowadays, it's the old man, he's got all the money. And a young man ain't got nothing in the world to say. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Let's Rock and Roll with DJ Treble. Now, in the beginning of that song, the man talking was Pete Townsend, and the man talking in the background saying the snarky remarks when Pete said, oh, Mose Allen wrote this song when he was 40 years old, and he goes, a mere teenager. That was Keith Moon. That was part of their live act, too, was a playful banter between the two, occasionally featuring Roger Daltrey, but typically not. It's usually Pete and Keith that would talk to each other. It was very, very funny. Anyway, we've been talking and listening to The Who, and it's been a really fun show so far tonight. But get ready for some more songs, though. Although the band attained financial stability for a few lifetimes with Tommy, Townsend wasn't comfortable creatively. He developed ideas for a second rock opera called Lifehouse, describing the symbiotic relationship between artist and audience. However, the rest of the band preferred to make a traditional rock album, partly because they were concerned with Townsend's nervous breakdown over Lifehouse. So the idea was abandoned and turned into the Who's next album, Who's Next. The album went straight to number one in the UK and the US after its release in August 1971, and includes two of the most well-known Who songs, Bobo O'Reilly, or if you're my mom, I thought it was called Teenage Wasteland, and Won't Get Fooled Again. The song with the scream you hear after David Caruso puts on his sunglasses after saying something awesome on CSI Miami? Yeah, it's from that song. The band went back on tour to promote the album, and Event 3 occurs during a performance in San Francisco on December 12, 1971. Keith Moon passes out over his kit after overdosing on brandy and barbiturates, but recovers to full strength and completes the show. I mean, that's pretty rock and roll. After the tour ends, The Who takes a long break to give Townsend time to create a follow-up album. This creates some tension between Daltrey and Townsend. Pete thought Roger just wanted to be in The Who to make money, and Roger thought Pete's ideas for the albums were becoming too pretentious. It also didn't help that Keith Moon was a huge party animal and excessively using drugs and alcohol. Despite this, the band releases their second rock opera in 1973, Quadrophenia. The story is centered around a boy named Jimmy, a kid thrust into the mod culture as he deals with a personality crisis, affecting his friends and family. The music features four themes, representative of the four personalities of the members and Jimmy: the tough guy, Roger, the romantic, John, the lunatic, Keith, and the hypocrite, Pete. I'll be playing you the epitome of Jimmy's personality crisis embodied in one song. You're listening to The Real Me on Let's Rock and Roll with DJ Treble here on Penguin Radio.
Can you see?
Welcome back to Let's Rock and Roll on Penguin Radio. I'm your host, DJ Treble. Now, the tour promoting Quadrophenia had four distinct incidents, and none of them were particularly great. Before the tour began, Daltrey refused Townsend's request to add a keyboardist to the touring band because the music that they were creating demanded that sort of thing. But Townsend assembled keyboard and synthesizer pieces on backing tapes as sort of a compromise. Unfortunately, the technology wasn't as advanced for their music, so this leads to a huge argument between Daltrey and Townsend, ending with Daltrey punching out Townsend. Second incident happened during a gig in Newcastle, where the backing tapes completely malfunctioned, and Townsend has a huge temper tantrum that includes him screaming at the sound man on stage, kicking the amps over, and destroying the backing tapes. The gig was finished with a vintage Who show, playing their older songs and guitar smashing and drum kicking. The Independent considered this show one of the worst of all time. Yikes. During a performance in Daly City, Moon passes out again, but this time Townsend asks the audience, "Can anyone play the drums? I mean somebody good." So an audience member, Scott Halpin, filled in on the drums for the rest of the show. That's one of my favorite rock and roll stories of all time. But lastly on this tour from hell, after a show in Montreal, everyone in the band except Daltrey, who decided to actually, you know, go to sleep, was arrested for their excessive damage to the hotel, which included smashing a marble like a marble table to the wall and destroying an antique painting. But yeah. Once the tour ended, the film Correspondent to Tommy was released in 1975. Roger Daltrey plays the lead role as Tommy, and Elton John, Eric Clapton, Tina Turner, and Jack Nicholson, to name a few stars, all make guest appearances. The film becomes a massive success, even earning Townsend an Oscar nomination for Best Film Score and Adaptation. The relationship between Daltrey and Townsend goes even more stale the same year, calling each other out in the media. This never ends well. Townsend wanted to go solo and felt like his commitment to The Who prevented him from doing that. However, Daltrey expressed his gratitude for The Who, saving him from a career as a sheet metal worker and not any money at all, and was upset that Townsend wasn't as committed as he was. So their next album, the lesser known The Who by Numbers, was released in 1975, with a more introspective album for Townsend. The first song off the album, Slip Kid, is a song rooted in Townsend's disillusionment with rock and roll, comparing it to a young soldier going into war and coming back shell-shocked and ruined for life. One of my favorites, and I'm happy to play it for you tonight. Here's Slip Kid, only on Penguin Radio.
I've got my clipboard, textbooks, lead me to the station, yeah, I'm off to the Civil War. Slip kid, second generation, I'm a soldier at 13. Slip kid, realization, there's no easy way to be free. No easy way to be free. It's a hard, hard world. I left my doctor's prescription bungalow behind me. I left the door ajar. My vacuum flask full of hot tea and sugar. Let the keys ride in my car. Slip kid, second generation, only halfway up the tree. Slip kid, I'm a relation, I'm a soldier at 63. No easy way to be free. We'll be right back.
welcome back to Let's Rock and Roll on Penguin Radio. This is your host, DJ Treble. We're wrapping things up here on the sixth installment of the show tonight, paying an hour-long tribute to The Who. After touring and being at the top of their game, The Who began to deteriorate as a result of Moon's declining health and drumming ability. This was prevalent in the recording of their 1970 album, Who Are You? Just before the release of the album, Keith Moon's last performance with the band was at Shepperton Sound Studios for the documentary The Kids Are All Right. Keith Moon died on September 7th, 1978, after taking 32 tablets of clemenzol, prescribed for his alcohol withdrawals. As a result, the band decided to carry on, that's what Keith would have wanted, releasing two relatively successful albums, Face Dances and It's Hard, in 1981 and 1982, respectively. The latter features their biggest hit, Eminence Front, a staple at future live shows. The Who break up shortly after, in 1983, leaving Townsend to regain his creative control for his solo albums. The Who reunited a few times with Daltrey, Townsend, and Entwistle until John's sudden death in 2002 at a Las Vegas hotel from a heart attack. Cocaine was found in his system. And, well, actually, the Las Vegas hotel part was they were performing a concert at Las Vegas. He didn't, like, go to a brothel or anything. They were performing. But still, he died tragically, out of nowhere, really. And that leaves Pete and Roger, while grieving, but the only surviving members of The Who. And they've done well at keeping the band alive. They continue to tour, including a tour for their 50th anniversary, The Who Hits 50. However, various U.S. tour dates were canceled this past year, as Daltrey was sick with viral meningitis. But, and I quote Townsend on this, and this is the latest update I've heard about the band, he promises the band would come back to 2016 stronger than ever. I'd hope so. I'd love to see them live. As The Who are one of my favorite bands ever, I'd probably start crying if I saw them in the flesh. I need to see these beloved bands before they die. Not before I die, before they die. Because if there's an opportunity for me to see one of my favorite classic rock bands live, I don't care how old they sound or terrible they sound, I can at least say, oh my god, I saw Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend live. This is fantastic. And I would pretty much die happy. But that concludes tonight's show. Don't forget to check out all the other DJs at radio.dominican.edu. For my shout out tonight, check out Cultural Kitchen, food from around the world with DJ Sizzle on Fridays from 10 to 11 a.m. I hope you enjoyed this hour about The Who tonight. This is DJ Treble signing off with some Baba O'Reilly. This is Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. And go Penguins!